We on? Now then, Ray Winston here. The real one. Close enough. Doing a new podcast with me mate Tony. Soprano, that is.
Oh, how you doing?
Talking all the big stuff. Birds, scraps, films.
And of course, men's mental health. With studio guests such as arch feminist and top broad Deborah Francis White and disgraced scumbag comedian Dapper Laughs.
Something for everyone. We're trying to be better men, ain't we, Tone?
That's right. We're bad boys done good.
Available on YouTube and to download on all good audio platforms. Go on, get off your hands, you dopey c***.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com. Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out UnitedHealthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Insane in the Membrane.
Insane in the Membrane.
Here we are. Here we are again. It's that time of the week where we bring you one of the finest podcasts in the world. I'm going to put it out there. I think so. I love it. I know you love it. So nice to have another edition. Here we are. Hope everyone's doing all right. The weather at the moment as I'm recording this is sublime. I'm actually sat looking out of my lounge window where we live in Leon C, and it's glorious. There's no way that I could be miserable today. What a day. I hope you lot are doing all right. Strange times still. You know, we're going to be in strange times. This is going to be it. For the foreseeable, there's going to be good bits, bad bits. There's going to be improvements. There's going to be setbacks. But you know what? As I always say, if we talk to each other and we support each other, we will get through this. I have no doubt in my mind. thank you again to all of you lovely, lovely listeners for subscribing and liking and telling everybody about this. If you could keep doing that, that would be fantastic, because the more ears this gets into, the more support there is from us to you to us. Again, like I say, we're in this together. Thank you to our lovely Patreons as well. You are really helping to keep the lights on, as I have no work, literally nothing. So this is what I do now. I'm a podcaster. So, but thank you for your patronage. I am going to be doing some stuff. I'm going to be putting some extra stuff on there. I just haven't got to it yet because I didn't really know what I was doing. But I'm getting to it. I've sought expert advice and they are putting me in the right direction. So that's going to be happening. So stay tuned for that. This week's guest is a hip-hop star, life coach, a podcaster. His name's Zuby, and Zuby is a fantastic human being. It was a real pleasure to talk to him. Just a lovely, just an honest dude, you know. We talked about that in the episode, actually. We talked about honesty and trying to be the best version of yourself that you can be. You know, we do put pressure on ourselves. We see social media and we look at pictures of people with the perfect body and the perfect life, and it's a load of old bollocks, really. You know, just, you don't have to, that doesn't make you a better person. Just, you know, just try and make little improvements. But we talk about that in the episode. You'll hear all about that. It was a great chat, as it always is. It was a real pleasure to have Zuby on. We really got into it. It was really great. So, do you know what? I'm going to stop talking about it and I'm going to let you listen. Here's Zuby. Zuby, thanks, man. Are you well?
Absolute pleasure. Yeah, I'm doing well. Thanks. How are you?
I'm good. Very well. Thank you. Very well. Oh, funnily enough, mentioning social media, I've been trying to sort of steer clear of it a bit, just because it just seems, you know, you just have to have a moment away, you know, because it's just, everyone's just on a piling on each other and everyone's shouting and hollering. No one's really listening to each other, it seems.
Yeah, you know? I don't need to explain that one to me, man.
I like the way that you're honest. I admire your honesty, man.
Thank you.
And I really like that in someone. Because that's what people need to be, just be a bit more honest, you know? And it's, Yeah, so when I see someone that just says it how it is, I really admire that. I mean, is that, have you always been that way? Is it just that you just, or you, I suppose you don't really know, you just are you.
Yeah, I think it's wired into my personality, but also just the way I was raised. You know, I was raised to be an honest person. Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of problems in the world stem from dishonesty and cowardice and inauthenticity. So I strive to be the opposite of all those things.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, man. I've said this before on here. I wasn't very honest growing up. I wasn't being honest about how I really felt about stuff. Like, I'd go along with things and it would just cause me to be really miserable, and you know, and then people could tell that there was a subconscious feeling that I wasn't being honest. Mm-hmm. But since, like, in the last few years, I've had counselling and things like that, and now I am more able to turn around and go, I'm not really feeling that, man. This is how I feel, and I have such a better life. It's incredible. Yeah. You know.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, you will, because you know it creates a schism within yourself if you're not being honest. And if you're not being honest, I mean, you can't tell one lie, right? You have to tell a web of them. So as soon as you start pretending to be something you're not, or denying something that you are, or I don't know, just saying something that you know not to be true, then both within yourself, both internally and externally, it's like you have to keep on lying every single day to maintain that facade and that image. And I think it wears on people.
Oh God, yeah, it's exhausting. I remember years ago, just lie upon lie, and it was only about things, just things that didn't need to be lied about. I could have just gone, listen, I can't do that today, but I can do it tomorrow. It would just spiral. Like you say, now it's just like I'm more able to go, listen, dude, I'm not feeling that. Let's do this instead, you know, and have a conversation. And this is what people need to be doing. And I see this all the time. People are just shouting and bickering, and it doesn't solve anything. You know, like that word performative seems to come up a lot lately. People seem to be they're happier. They want to shout about it, but they're not actually doing anything in real life, mm-hmm. which is the different, you know, it's...
Yeah, and I said the other day that, you know, a lot of people care more, you know, most people care more about looking good or appearing to be good than actually being good.
Yes.
Right? So we live in this performative era. A lot of people, you know, use the term virtue signaling. A lot of people want to come across a certain way. I mean, you see this all the way from celebrities all the way to, you know, just, you know, normal general people. But you know, it's natural to want people to perceive you in a positive way. And we all want people to think that we're good and that we're decent, et cetera. But you can do that simply by being those things. And you don't need to play to the crowd, and you don't need to virtue signal, and you don't need to jump on every latest trending topic or hashtag or whatever it is to make it seem like you're a good person. And to be honest, I'm at the stage where I see those things as warning signs now, right? If I see someone making it too, if I look at, I don't know, if I see someone's social media profile and they have, you know, they've got their preferred pronouns in there and the rainbow pride flag and hashtag BLM and hashtag, right? And those tend to be the worst people, right? There's some really awful people who do that, but they use it as a mask to hide the fact that they're awful people. So people who are less enlightened will see that and be like, oh, wow, look, this person is there for all of these positive causes. And look, oh, they obviously care about these people because they've put a hashtag there. And it's like, no, that's just performative. And it's also a shield, because if you then look at the sort of stuff they're putting out there, oftentimes you'll find that they are very vicious and hostile and just not nice people.
When the Black Lives Matter thing exploded, with the George Floyd, and I saw people online, like, they were getting behind black artists, they were getting black people to come onto their podcasts and things like that, and it was like, well, I'm not being rude, but you should have been doing this anyway. Why did it take this extreme thing to happen for you to go, oh shit, yeah, we should be doing more? You know, like, And so you saw, and like you say, you kind of go, nah, I see what you're doing there. That's not what you should, you know, you should have already been doing this. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a funny thing because, it certainly works on a lot of people, but there are people like myself who it really rubs the wrong way. I mean, coming on to what you're saying, I mean, for example, after that situation, we've seen all of these companies and organizations and corporations, et cetera, jump on this Black Lives Matter thing, and they all now want to talk about racism, and you know, they want to let everyone know that they're one of the good ones. And I'm a bit like, well, you know, I sort of assumed so. Like, I assumed that all of these. Right?
Like, yeah, yeah.
I don't need a statement from my supermarket or my website hosting provider or my video game company to remind me that, oh, actually, we like Black people. I was like, well, I kind of hoped that you weren't discriminating against me to begin with. But the fact that you feel the need to make this so explicit, I'm now a little bit suspicious as to what you were doing before, you know?
Yeah. And it's funny, like you say, with these companies, my partner, Jade, and I have these conversations all the time. It's all very well these companies getting behind Black people and going, this is what we're doing. This is what we're doing. We're supporting. You go, yeah, but you're not. What needs to change is behind the scenes. The people in the system making the choices needs to change, and that's where these arguments collapse, because these people don't want to give up their positions. They want,
no, of course not.
So it's more, you know, like, oh yeah.
And I'll be honest, I don't necessarily think they should. Like,
no.
I think that if they really, really believed in what they were saying and they thought that was the way forward, then more of them would. But I don't even advocate for that. Like, I believe in meritocracy. I'm like, look, just like, let people do their thing, treat people fairly, apply the same standards to everybody. And diversity, as people call it, is a natural result of that, because you have people who are capable and have things to offer of all different, all across the board, whether you're talking, you know, race, ethnicity, gender, sexuality, whatever. Like, if you just let people do what they want to do and you don't hinder them and you don't block them, you'll naturally get some degree of it. It's not going to be, nothing is ever going to be 100% representative of a given population. And we don't expect it to be, right?
No.
We're not, no one is trying to increase the diversity of the NBA. Nobody's trying to increase the diversity of hip hop music or EDM or heavy metal, right? A very male dominated hip hop, you know, very like no one cares. It's just like, okay, that's what people want to do. I'm not saying any diversity initiatives to get more, you know, Black and Asian people on the ski slopes or in the Olympic swimming pool.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? So it's just like, look, just let people, as long as there's equality of opportunity, then that's the best we can do. Anything beyond that, you're just really social engineering and you're creating an unsolvable problem. And it's a problem that doesn't really exist to begin with in most cases.
True. Yeah. Very true, man. I just want to be able, like, equality comes up all the time. And that's what we, like you say, it's what we should be striving for, is that equality. And because some people misunderstand what equality is. I see this all the time. They're like, there's people I know, family members, and they're all shouting and like, oh, all lives matter and blah, blah, blah. You go, no, get, you're not understanding what we're saying. And equality doesn't mean instead of, it means as well as. It's people are really misunderstanding that point. And it, you know.
Yeah, but the problem is, see, this is the thing, is people get lost in the weeds. And this is a problem with a lot of the rhetoric, is a lot of stuff is inherently divisive because, you know, like, I don't really want to dwell on the Black Lives Matter thing. But look, every single decent person at the statement level, like if we're going to take these statements literally, everybody agrees that Black Lives Matter, and everybody agrees that all lives matter, and everybody agrees that Asian lives matter and white lives matter and brown lives, like, these are all true statements, right? We all know this. So it kind of shows how silly the discourse has gotten, that we're now having huge arguments over, do we say Black Lives Matter or do we say all lives matter? Is all lives matter offensive? Is it? And I'm like, we're in the weeds, right? Like, you know, like we're in the weeds right now. Look, we all agree racism is bad. Police brutality is bad. Treat people fairly. Every decent person agrees that. So it's like, okay, can we, like, take it up a level and, you know, not be fighting? Like, when I see people fighting between Black Lives Matter and All Lives Matter, like, I just roll my eyes, because I'm just like, yeah, you're lost. Like, you've just, you're both saying the same thing, right? You're saying the same thing, but it's just, you're lost in the details of how you're perceiving it.
Yeah, true. Very true. And it's funny what you say about not getting too hung up on the Black Lives Matter thing on here in this conversation. I had Carla Hall on. I've got another podcast called Insane in the Fembrain, where I have strong, powerful women talk about what it, because I'm not a woman, so I don't know. So I'm asking the questions, like, what does it feel like to be a woman? What have you had to deal with and things like that? And we had Carla Hall on, and we didn't talk about race once. It didn't come up. We didn't mention it. And then someone said to me, oh, you didn't talk about race. You're like, yeah, well, good. Black people don't want to talk about race all the time. What's wrong with you? It's even now it was like, yeah, you're right. As we were getting into it, I'm like, oh, well, let's not do this. It's good to touch on it. But what really interests me is you're not only a musician, but you're a life coach. Mm-hmm. And you're a fitness coach. So you care about people and their well-being.
Oh, very much so, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what motivates me. I want to inspire and help and motivate as many people as I can. That's literally why I do what I do.
Mm. And I love that. Again, it goes back to your positivity, honesty. Do you find that easy to keep pushing yourself? Or do you like everyone else, you have your days where you go, fuck this, man, I can't, you know.
Yeah, you know, I'm pretty consistent. Like, I'm a human being. Of course, I have days where I feel more motivated and inspired than I do on other days. And I have some days where the negativity sort of, you know, normally I've got a pretty strong exoskeleton, but you know, occasionally I'll just get frustrated and just sort of, I don't tend to get angry at individuals, but sometimes I just sort of feel this lament for society, especially over the last few months, where I'm just like, oh my gosh, like, what's wrong with everybody? Like, can't we just,
yeah.
Yeah. So I feel that sometimes, but no, generally I'm pretty consistent. I mean, I'm obsessed with self-improvement for myself, because I know that if I become the best version of myself that I can, then I can do my job better and I can help and inspire and motivate other people more to do the same. And fundamentally, you know, if we're talking about problems in the world, I really think that, look, if we can all get better individually, then we all get better collectively,
yeah. Right?
So by me trying to become the best version of Zuby rather than the worst version, every time, like, I'm sending out little ripples and shockwaves into the world, and other people see that, other people hear it, other people see what's going on, and it's like, okay, you know, I'm going to push myself a little bit better today, or okay, I saw how he handled that, so I'm going to try to handle that better myself and not let anger get the best of me, etc. And it has an effect, and it has a bigger effect the larger the audience and the platform becomes. And so, yeah, I am by no means perfect. I'm still always learning every single day and trying to get better at all this stuff I do. But I think it's important and valuable.
Yeah, and I think what people misunderstand is that they seem to think that they should attack their entire life, like, to make changes in every aspect, and you've got to get up one day and start running, and you've got to start changing stuff, and you're like, no, little bits, start small. don't look at the whole thing and go, everything's fucked, I need to change everything about me. If you start making little changes, if you do something different that you didn't do yesterday in a positive way, that helps, right? That's all part of it, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. It's incremental. Everything's incremental. I mean, it's, as you know, I'm really into my fitness and training, and beyond the physical aspect, I mean, I'm more drawn to the mental aspect. And one thing I really love about strength training is, to me, it's like a metaphor for life, right? You know, so you go in there and you do repetitions, right? It's not like you go to the gym once and you come out and you're strong and you're jacked. It's like repetitions, consistency, perseverance, dealing with setbacks, following, you know, being disciplined, et cetera. And one thing I love about weight training is that it's totally meritocratic, right?
Yeah.
It's 100% meritocratic. And, you know, you can lift the weight or you can't. And whether or not you progress is up to you. It's not a team sport, right? In football, you could play your best football, rugby, basketball, whatever. You could have the best game of your life. And you know what? You can still lose because the rest of your team didn't play well or the other team played better. If you are good with your training and your nutrition, and you're getting enough sleep and drinking enough water, et cetera, you will make progress. You will become a better version of yourself. You will physically get stronger. You'll be able to lift more weight, run for longer, do everything more than you could before. And it happens bit by bit by bit. And when you look back, I mean, I started training when I was 15 or 16. And it's funny, you know, like I remember lifting, like I remember the first time I lifted certain weights, right? Like I remember the first time I benched 100 kilos how happy I was and how difficult it was, et cetera. And now, I mean, post lockdown, I don't know, but normally I can, you know, do 100. Now I can do 100 kg for, you know, 10 reps.
Wow.
And it's like, you know, and it's, but it's like, wow. And at the same body weight as well. So it's kind of like, man, I remember when lifting this thing was like, you know, felt like lifting a house or something. And now it's like, you know, it's like doing, exactly. And it's the same with everything. You know, whether you're learning a language or building a business or starting a podcast or a YouTube channel or whatever, it's like, look, you're not going to just do one and then that's it. It's like, you know, it's consistency. You just got to keep going and going and going. And then you look back after a few years and it's like, oh, wow, we've really built something here.
Yeah.
Like we created something. I mean, look at Joe Rogan, right?
Yeah.
Right. You know, if you go back and what I love about that is, you know, cause all of his old podcasts are still up there on YouTube. So you can go back and you can watch episode 1, episode 5, episode 10, and you know, and it's on all levels, you just see the improvement and the change. And now people are looking at his podcast like, oh my gosh, like how did he do this? This is, I'm like, man, go back and look and you can see it. You know, you see the same as some of these huge YouTube channels that have 10 million subscribers and everyone sees it now. And they're like, oh my gosh, or they think, oh, this person got lucky or they did. And I'm like, no, that was not luck. Go back, you go on their channels, you go sort by oldest and you see they uploaded their first video in 2007 on some blurry camera with terrible audio. And it's just like, wow, okay. You can really see the progress. So I love seeing that.
Yeah. It's that assumption that people think you're going to be brilliant at something straight away. And then that comes, like you go, it goes back to that mental strength. Like you say, is that you'll go for a run, say, I mean, even that, you're like, you don't have to run for hours. Just go for a fast walk for 20 minutes. Just walk up and back. Just something. And then you'll go for half an hour tomorrow. And then in 2 weeks' time, you'll be running a little bit. And then before you know it, you're a year down the line. And you're running and you're a bit fitter but people don't seem to realize how quickly time passes. You know, like 2 years ago, I was saying I need to get back to the gym. That was two years ago. That's 2 years that I've wasted not doing anything. You know, and it just go and do it. But you don't have to be brilliant at it straight away. And that's what people need to realize.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I always recommend to people, like when I'm doing coaching and stuff. In fact, I had a coaching call earlier today and, you know, the guy I was working with, he was very hesitant about starting a new project that he wanted to do. And, you know, he kept, you know, he just wanted to procrastinate. And I said, look, man, just do it. Right.
Yeah.
You know, he kept saying like, oh, I should do this or I'll try to do this or I'll probably, I was like, look, just drop all of that from your vocabulary. Just do it. Like if there's no sort of technical roadblock that's, you know, preventing you from doing it, then just look, we can literally finish this call and then just go and open that thing and just get started, right? Just get the ball rolling. Yeah. It doesn't need to be remotely perfect. Just get the ball rolling. And I, as someone who creates a lot of projects, you know, both my music, podcast, you know, I wrote and released my first book last year, et cetera, is I've just learned the importance of just getting started.
Yeah.
Right? Just getting started. So when it came to my book, I mean, I was like, because one of my friends was really sort of like pushing me to do it. And he was like, yeah, man, you've got to write it. You know, you've got to write this book, et cetera. And I was like, man, like, I don't know. Am I the right person to even do it? I'm not ready, blah. And he's like, just, you know, and I was like, all right. I opened a Word document, just started writing, you know, like just started writing. And yeah, within a few days, the first draft was done.
Wow. Man.
So, you know, and now that book's gone on to sell a few thousand copies and, you know, it's still selling.
Awesome.
And so it's just like, yeah, that's it. Or I started my podcast January 2019. We've just gone past 100 episodes now. And when I started my podcast again, I did not know what I was doing. I was
same.
I had no idea what I was doing. It's like, all right, I'm just gonna start. I'm just gonna press record, and I'm gonna talk into this mic. And then, okay, in my next episodes, I'll get guests on. I'll just bring on a few people I know to begin with, and we'll just have conversations. And we'll record them, and then I'll just upload the video, upload the audio. And, you know, it's still, I've still got a long way to go with the podcast. It's got tons of room for improvement, but it's like, you know what? I'm just going to keep doing it and had some, you know, really, you know, very well-known guests already from lots of, you know, in all sorts of interesting sectors and areas. And yeah, just continuously going and keep making it better. And I don't know, like hopefully in, before we know it, we'll be in 2023. And
yeah, yeah.
I can then say, oh, okay, oh, wow, look, oh, we've got, you know, 500 episodes now. And yeah. We've had this person and we've had that person, et cetera. But if I just sat around for those 4 years and was just like, I don't know what to do. Mm. What microphone should I get? What's the best program to use? You know?
Like, yeah.
You can procrastinate forever because there are so many options and different things. And it's like, you know what? Just get started. And you might find, oh, okay. Later on, you might, oh, you know what? We'll use this program to record instead. Or oh, you know what? We can do this better. Or maybe we should change this. And it's like, you know, but it's easier to do that once you're already going.
Oh, God, yeah. And it is that fear. It's the fear of failure. You can't, it's like with this. It's like with the podcast. I ummed and ahed about it for ages. And it was only because my partner does stuff with producer Paul, who's on here. Mm. And she happened to mention it to him. And he's like, yeah, let's do it. And that's what he needed. He needs someone to go, come on, let's do it. Stop fucking about.
Yeah.
And then it is. It's that fear. You just got to start. You just have to start. Whatever that is, mm-hmm. you want to eat less bread, eat less bread. You know, start with that. You know, just these little bits. It doesn't need to be the whole thing all in one go.
Exactly.
You know, and that's so important. And people listening to this will really appreciate that. I know when I was told that, just stop looking at the whole thing. Start with the thing you can change. And that was, you know, that was it.
And it motivates you because once you start seeing progress, you know, nothing motivates better than progress as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
So if someone's trying to lose weight, you know, losing that first pound or the first kilo, if someone is trying to, you know, get stronger, you know, adding the first time they add 5 kilos to the bar, it's like, cool. If you can add 5 kilos to the bar once, you can do it again and you can do it. Oh, you know what? Look, oh, over the course of 2 years, you're now lifting 50, 60 kilos more. You know, in some cases, depending on the exercise, you might be lifting 200 kilos more than you were at the beginning. Like you just over time, it's just incremental bit by bit. And you don't really notice the small changes, but then over time it gets better. Like I imagine when you first started this podcast, you probably started noticing certain things even in your own speech that you were like, oh, why do I keep, maybe there's a phrase you keep saying, or maybe you're saying too much, or maybe you're saying like too much, or you know, we all have these, you can't get rid of them totally. But I know that when I started my podcast, I was like, oh gosh, why do I keep saying that? I'd noticed just annoying ticks in my speech patterns and things like that.
Yep.
Or some people, they speak too quickly, or they find, oh, I'm actually interrupting too much, or I'm doing this. But until you start, you don't know any of this. You just do it, and then you get better and you get better, and there's always room for improvement.
Always. I say yeah a lot. I have to listen back to the podcast, and then so then when we're promoting it, I can say, oh, we talked about this and this, and then I listen to it, and after sort of 20 minutes I'm like, oh God, if I say yeah one more time. Yeah. But you know, that's this, like you say, it's in you. That's what you do. You got to not get hung up too much on that sort of thing.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com.
That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/comedy ad free. That's Amazon.com/comedy ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We're looking for a sponsor to help get this brilliant conversation to an even bigger audience. Sponsoring the show, as well as a promotional trailer, means that your message and our message will be inserted into some of Acast's biggest podcast titles. Get on board and partner with Insane in the Membrane. Go to pauldaniels.tv for more information.
Your music, that's something else as well, because there's so many people that wanted to be in bands, or they wanted to learn an instrument, or they wanted to do something, and they never did it. What was that the same with you? Did you just go, fuck it, I'm going to do it? Or did it take a while? Did you just ease into it? How did you get into music?
That's a good question. So I first got into music, I guess, technically as a child. I used to play piano. Oh, so wow. I started playing piano maybe from the age of 7 or so. And I used to do recitals and stuff like that. I had piano lessons. I would do recitals and performances. And then I stopped playing piano when I was about 12 or 13, just because I was doing a lot of other things. I was getting into other activities and sports, and I didn't really have a passion for playing piano. Mm. So I reached a stage where I wasn't really improving because I wasn't really practicing.
Right.
And me being my conscientious self, I also didn't want to waste my parents' money because they were paying for these lessons, and I knew they weren't cheap. So I was like, you know what, if I'm not making progress because I'm not practicing, let me just be upfront with them and say, let me just stop this because I don't want you spending money on something that I'm not really doing anything with. So that was sort of my first foray into music. And then many years later, when I went to university, so I studied computer science at Oxford University. And when I was in my first year there, I just started rapping as a hobby. I just started doing it for fun. I'd been into hip-hop music as a fan for a while. And I found out that I was able to do it, and I had a knack for writing and performing, and within 10 months I released my first album.
Wow.
So my first album, I'd been rapping for 10 months and I put that out there. It was called Commercial Underground. It had a single on there called Step Into Me, which was my first music video. It was my first song to get played on BBC radio, and I actually had a music video out on national TV on an old UK music channel, which was called Channel U at the time. And that was my first sort of, that was what brought me my first fans and accolades and things like that. And then, over time, just started taking things more and more seriously. And in 2011, I've been full-time since 2011, November 2011 is when I left the corporate world. I worked as a management consultant for a while for a big company. And 2011, I left that, and I've been independent, self-employed ever since then.
Oh man, that's so cool. That is so cool. There's a guy called DJ Format and Abdominal, and I was listening. They've got a song called Behind the Scenes, and it's all about how people say to him, "Oh, how did you do that? And he basically just says, "I work my fucking ass off. That's how I did this. You know, I'm always promoting, and if I'm not promoting, I'm writing letters. If I'm not writing letters, I'm doing something else. There's always something to be done." And I think that's what people don't understand, that it takes work. Like you've said, like, you know, you started rapping and then in 10 months you had an album out. But that takes work. You put the work in. Mm-hmm. And that's what people don't seem to understand. They'll pick up a drum, some drumsticks. They'll rattle around. They go, "Oh, I can't do it." And then they'll stop.
Yeah.
You know, and it's that again goes back to that mental strength to just keep pushing on. It's all about that's pushing on, isn't it? You know?
Yeah. And I getting over the sucky part, right? I call it, I say embrace the suck, right? Just accept it, right? When you do anything new, it doesn't matter if it's learning a language or an instrument or developing a new skill. I don't know, learning photography, making videos, doing audio, you're going to suck at the beginning.
No, right? Gotcha.
This is just, you're just going to suck at the beginning, and it's not fun to do something that you know you're not good at most times. Mm. So most people give up within the sucking stage, right? So they're like, oh gosh, like they'll make two or three YouTube videos and they're like, oh my gosh, my videos are terrible. and then their channel just goes dead, or they'll do two or three podcasts and they'll, you know, oh no, this is not yeah, it. And they stop. Yeah. And you can often win in things, or at least get ahead of 99% of people simply by just keep going. Right. If you just keep going, then you'll just outlast other people. And, I mean, this is something I've even done in my own music career. I mean, if I remember back to when I first started making music and I think of all of my peers and fellow musicians, et cetera, only a tiny handful of them are still going and are still active, because most people just dropped out. They quit because it's hard, right? It's difficult. Yeah, and I don't just mean the musical side of it is actually the easier part, but the business and the promotion and willing to go out there and do the legwork and really push yourself and deal with incredible amounts of rejection and negativity. And, you know, it can be brutal, but it's like, you know what, if I just keep going, I can win just by being the last person, last man standing, right? You just keep going. It's like, you know, if you were running a marathon, right? I have no desire to run a marathon. I don't like long distance running, but if I were racing against a bunch of people who just are going to quit, then it doesn't matter. Like I'll win, right? If I'm racing against 100 people and 99 of them, you know, the other 99 drop out before we finish the 26 miles, then I win that race, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, even if maybe I didn't get off to the quickest start, or, you know, maybe I wasn't even... You can even have people who are technically more talented than you in some regards, but talent is pointless if you don't develop it. And True. You don't even really know where, like once someone has done something a lot, what they've worked for ends up looking like talent. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Yeah. So for example, I mean, I get people who, I don't know, I'll be training in the gym or something and I'll get someone who's been training for a couple of weeks and they'll be like, man, like, I wish I had your genetics. And I'm like, you wouldn't have said that if you saw me when I first entered the gym, man. Like I've been lifting for 17 years. Like I didn't walk in the gym and just pick this weight up the first day. So
it's like a drumstick, just like, yeah, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'll do. Yeah. You see a master of anything, whether it's, I don't know, you're watching a band, you know, watching someone playing. Think of the best guitar player or the best singer or what. I can guarantee you, even the most talented guitar player, piano player, the first time they would have played guitar or piano, they would have sucked.
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's
they would have sucked the first time. Period.
Like, yeah. I'm a comedian. That's what I do. It's my day job. And it took me 15 years to be good at it. It took me, like, I get people all the time saying, you're driving to Liverpool for no money. You go, yeah. They go, why? I go, because that's what I have to do. Like you say about the legwork, you know. I've been to Glasgow. I got the money together, flew to Glasgow, did a gig, flew back, and that's what you need to do. But that took me 15 years. Oh, and then what happened is you put this work in, and then you'll explode somewhere. People go, wow. Where did he come from? That overnight success. They go, you fucking kidding? I've slept in my car more times than I've slept in my own bed. It's you know.
Yeah. And people don't see that. People really just don't see it. No, because it's funny with me, because I mean, realistically, it's this could be a real number, that at least 95% of people who have heard of me didn't know who I was 20 months ago.
No.
Right? So 95% of people who have even heard of me only discovered me in the past 18, 19 months, right? Because I had a sort of catalytic moment where things just started to grow very, very rapidly and gained hundreds of thousands of followers in a relatively short period of time. Mm. So a lot of people don't realize I released my first album in 2006.
Yeah, right.
I've put out five albums and three EPs. I put out, you know, 2006, 2008, 2010, 2011, 2012, 2014. I've been putting out music. I've been putting out albums. I've done four tours. I've done over 100 gigs. I've performed in 8 different countries. And all of this is before 98% of people knew who I was. So it's weird. So a lot of people are only sort of seeing it from that moment onwards.
Yeah.
And you can tell even with the things people say, because you're just like, oh my gosh, like if you knew the grind I'd been putting in before this, like you would be more respectful. Like you wouldn't, yeah. even if you don't really like me, you would at least understand that, you know, this wasn't just, oh, this is a guy who just, oh, he just made a tweet. And
yeah,
suddenly all of this happened. It's like, no, like just like that's just not how it happened, you know.
I know. I should have taken photographs of myself sleeping at Nottingham bus station at 3 a.m. just to show people that yeah. This is what I did, otherwise they don't believe you. You just wandered into it.
What's great is I have documented quite a lot of the journey, so that is good. You know, I really built my audience, because I used to just travel around the UK selling my CDs on the street, and then eventually in shopping centers, just doing pop-up shops all over the country. And so I've got thousands of photos like on the street and in shopping centers, just with fans of who bought my music or my t-shirts or whatever, just photos in every single city in the UK. I've got photos. So if I ever needed to, you know, if anyone really was doubting me, it's like, okay, I'll pull out some photos from 2010 showing me, hustling my CDs in Oxford or in Birmingham or whatever. And so, you know, like there's nothing to prove in that sense, I guess, really, because it people like that don't really matter. But yeah, I guess what we're both saying is that people tend to see the tip of the iceberg, but not everything that sort of came beforehand. And you see this with a lot of artists. I'll tell you an amazing example is Ed Sheeran.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I first heard about Ed Sheeran in, I want to say, about 2008.
Yeah.
And we actually performed on the same, there was an online show that they did for a short time called The Cordless Show, which we both performed at. This is something, I think they stopped doing it in like 2009. So this is a long time ago. And I remember hearing about Ed Sheeran at that point. I remember when he was like busking and all that. I remember when I had more Twitter followers than him. So I really remember seeing all of that. And then within a very short period of time, I remember he had this sort of like 2-year period where things just went crazy.
Yeah.
And, you know, now he's like one of the biggest artists in the entire world. And that to me, like I sort of saw that happen. I also saw it with guys like Tiny Tempa. Like I remember Tiny Tempa was just, you know, much more underground. He had a couple songs that bubbled underground, but he was doing small gigs here and there. And I remember in even where I used to live in Bournemouth, and I remember he had a gig at a 300 capacity venue, and I think maybe like 100 and something people showed up. And then 2 years later, he sold out like a 8,000 cap venue in the same city and was touring, right? So it's like, so you see those things happen. You're just like, man, this is just nuts. But people don't see the average person doesn't see below the surface. Yeah.
No, that's it. Yeah, they say to me, oh, you only work 20 minutes a night. You're like, you fucking kidding. It took me 5 hours to get there. And it's just,
oh gosh.
And then I've got to come up with
15 years experience.
Yeah, exactly. And you're like, 15 really?
15 years experience. Yeah.
How did you end up in Bournemouth? I mean, when I was a kid, Bournemouth is where all the old ladies used, that's where we used to retire to.
Yeah. So I grew up in Saudi Arabia, as you may know. And then, my family moved to the UK sort of permanently in 2008, and Bournemouth was just the sort of chosen home base for where my parents kind of came back to. So I ended up in Bournemouth for a while. I'm in Southampton now, but I know Bournemouth very well. I was there for a couple of years in and out. So that's sort of how that happened.
Mm. And how did you? I know you had that horrible shit happen to you. At Bournemouth Station. How did you feel after that? After that went down? How did you cope with that? We've spoken about, because someone said to me ages ago, they said, oh, they were talking about the police brutality and things like that in other countries, and they're going, no, it doesn't happen here. And I'm like, this goes back to sort of the white privilege conversation that I've talked about before. Someone said to me, what white privilege? I'm like, yeah, I can drive my car after 10 p.m. at night I'm pretty sure I'll get left alone. There's another comedian called Quincy that's been on this podcast, and he talked about an incident that happened to him. He was just driving his kid to Saturday school, and they got pulled over because they're in a Range Rover or in some flash car, not flash car, but a car worth a few quid. And somebody said, how did you... Just Quincy just said he didn't go to Saturday school with his son. They explained what had gone on, and then they just went off, and they went off and got some lunch, and they just sort of processed the whole thing. How did you feel after that had gone down?
Yeah. So to give context to people. So this was in 2008 or 2009. I was just getting off. I'd been selling my CDs and promoting my music in Southampton. And then I was coming back to Bournemouth, where I was living at the time. I came off the train, and I was met by two armed police units with their police dogs, and had about five guns trained on me, and shouted at, tell me to get on the ground. I was arrested at gunpoint, taken off to a side room and searched and questioned, told I was under arrest for a Section 1 firearms offense, which I don't know what that means, etc. Marched across the station and put in a police car and taken to the station, where I was there for about 10 minutes before they realized that they had totally cocked up and got the wrong person. Wow. And after that, which they apologized and took the handcuffs off me and let me go home. So firstly, it was very surreal. It was a very surreal incident. And also, bearing in mind that the normal police in the UK don't even carry guns. So it was like the specific firearms unit that was called out. It wasn't like the normal police.
They have to call it in and go,
Yeah. So in the moment, what was going on in my mind in the moment, I thought I was like in a dream, honestly. It was like, I felt like I was in a film or something. I was like, wait, what is... Because I heard people shouting, get down, put your hands up, get down on the ground. And so I'm looking around sort of like wondering who they're talking to, right? And I look up and the guns are aimed at me.
Jesus.
Right? And I'm like, wait, what? And so, I complied, right? I complied.
Oh, of course.
And I will, of course, I will, people have been killed for not complying. So firstly, I would say anyone who ever, it's very rare that this is ever going to happen to anybody listening, but if you ever are in this sort of situation, just comply, even if you don't know what's going on. So, I did that and everything. Of course, in the back of my mind, I'm just confused. I know I haven't done anything, so I don't have any sort of guilty conscience or anything. It's like throughout the whole thing, I was like, all right, I don't know. I have no idea what is going on. I don't know who they think I am. I don't know what they think I've done, but I haven't done it. So this is weird and this is kind of scary and a bit embarrassing, but I know I'm going to come out of this fine because I haven't done anything. Right. So that was my attitude. And I'm an extremely calm person. I'm like in the bottom 2% of the personality trait neuroticism. So I'm not an emotional person. Like I'm like at the very, very bottom end of that. So if something this sort of potentially traumatic happens, I'm probably the best person that it can happen to, because I'm not going to get any kind of like PTSD or anxiety or anything over this. So the truth is that, and this isn't me just trying to be tough here, the reality is that it was harder for, like, to this day, it's harder for like my mom and some of my siblings and my parents to sort of deal with when, like, even if it ever comes up. We don't talk about it a lot, but if it does, they get more upset than I do. Right.
Yes. Yeah.
That's kind of the reality of it. I'm kind of like, and there was the full investigation and whatever. The whole thing came out. I learned what happened and what the mistake was and how they cocked up their communications and what they thought I'd done and who they thought I was, etc. That all came out sort of after the fact.
Right.
And so I can understand it in that context. But for someone who sort of hasn't got all that information, people jump to a lot of different assumptions. I get people who think like, oh, did they think, you were a terrorist, or was this like purely racial? Was it this? Was it that? And people have their own sort of filters and assumptions about it, which aren't necessarily correct.
No.
So I just try to speak on it honestly and just say like, look, this is what happened. This is the mistake that was made. Essentially, the whole thing happened because one police officer, not the arrest, the arresting officers technically didn't do anything wrong based on the information they were given. They basically thought that I was someone who'd been chasing someone around Basingstoke city center with a firearm, which obviously I wasn't, but that's who they thought I was. So that is why I was met with such force But the problem is that there was someone in the communications with another police force, not even Dorset, but in Hampshire, who had essentially communicated the incorrect information about the suspect and about who I was, et cetera, and the wires had gotten crossed. And so it ended up them being like certain that I was this guy, basically.
Oh, yeah.
Even though I wasn't, of course. So that's in the background. That's sort of the background story of what happened. But yeah, it was a weird experience, and but it's not something I dwell on. If I ever bring it up, I did write a song about it called "Divided We Stand," which was just a song sort of talking about those issues and sharing some of my thoughts about it. But yeah, I mean, nowadays, like I don't dwell on it. I sometimes will bring it up if it's relevant. And also just because of, you know, sometimes with some of the things that I say and some of my views on things, some people think that some people get the mistaken idea that I'm sort of disconnected from the fact that things like this happen. I'm like, man, I've been through this worse than almost anybody. So like, no, I'm not talking from the point of like, oh, I don't know that the police ever like make mistakes or do anything. Like I've been the sort of victim of it, right? I've been on the opposite end of multiple guns, but fuck. I'm speaking from that perspective, and I'm saying like, look, that can happen, and this can happen to everyone, but this is not an everyday occurrence. So like, let's not pretend that it is. And if it does occur, look, this is how we can stop it, so hopefully it doesn't happen. But like I just said, you know, if someone ever is in this situation, then this is the best way to respond to it, right? Don't start fight the police officers or try to take their gun, or right, because we've seen this happen, and it's like you're not gonna win. So if this happens, then I know it's crap and I know it's not cool, but just comply and then deal with it later. I think that's actually an important message for people to understand, especially in the US, because in the UK this is far more rare. But I think in the US that People might think it sounds crazy for me to say this, but I think that people should be taught how to be arrested.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. I think that would actually save lives, because you see a lot of these situations, especially in the USA, where situations just get very, very escalated because people don't comply. And I can understand from an emotional perspective not wanting to do this, but like, look, as I said, fighting with armed cops, fighting with the cops is a bad idea, period. Like, just don't, right? Like, even if you haven't done anything, right? If the cops come and kick in your door right now, right, and wave guns at you, like, even don't try to fight them. Just okay, comply, and then you can deal with it later. And if there's a case, maybe you can even make a case against them or whatever, but just stay alive, and then you'll deal with it later. And some people won't even want me to say that, but I think it's important.
Yeah, it's funny, but it's fucked up that we have to, like you say, we have to learn how to be arrested. That's something I've never had to talk about before.
It's weird. You know, it sounds weird. And like I said, but it's like, you know, we expect that you're never gonna. It's a bit like when you get on a plane, right? And they teach you, okay, if we land on water, this is what you do. If this happens, you know, the oxygen mask comes down, the life. I'm like, look. Outflow or not, I don't know how many hundreds of planes I've been on, but I hope like I'm never going to need this information, but you should have it, right?
The planet, right?
Because stuff goes wrong. Anything that happens millions of times in the world and it involves human beings, there are going to be mistakes made. Yeah. This is just reality. We can try to minimize things, but it's just reality. So it's kind of like, okay, look, if you ever happen to be in this crazy situation, this is the best way to handle it. This is the best way to deal with it. Of course, you train the police officers, you get everything. But even if police had perfect training and et cetera, there'll still be mistakes. Someone's, you know, mistaken identity is a real thing, right? Someone thinks, okay, the suspect is someone else, but you match this description, or they think you do, or whatever. And now you are being stopped and searched, or, you know, people get, police might visit the wrong address. All sorts of things happen, you know, mistakes are made. Yeah,
it seems to be, having watched, watched documentaries and things and that about the US, and there seems to be a lot of that mistaken identity, and there seems to be a lot of people put in prison that didn't do anything. And so it makes it So it makes it difficult when you say, you know, you should comply, where we see it all the time. People, one of the biggest things that keeps me awake at night is the injustice. I can't watch a lot of these documentaries about people that have been put in prison for not having, because I'm like, how do you cope with knowing you didn't do it? And when you, I watched the documentary, the 13th, and it, you're like, there's so many people in prison that didn't do it, or they did something so minor, and it, I don't know, man.
It's complicated, man.
Yeah, it's complicated.
And you know, you get people who are, and it happens on both sides, right? There are people who should be in prison who are walking the streets.
Absolutely.
Right? There are people who absolutely 100% should be in prison, but they're out there and about walking the streets. And then sometimes they'll, I don't know, they'll kill someone or something, and then it'll turn out when you get the media reports that, oh, this person had previously been arrested like 15 times and they were still meant to be in prison, but they released them because there wasn't enough space, you know, like whatever the situation, right? Or, oh, we knew this person was a terrorist, but we didn't do anything. And so you get both cases, and then you have someone who's serving a life sentence because they sold some weed 20 years ago. And it's know, you get both sides of it. And man, I'm no legal expert at all. I'm just someone who tries to apply common sense. And both of those situations are like, that's not good. That shouldn't happen.
No. Oh man, what do you make of all the controversy? Because like going back to you being honest, you speak your mind, and you don't. You know, I don't think you sit there and go, "Oh, this is going to be controversial." You just like, you know, How do you cope with it when things, because it just seems to be everything can be controversial or can be deemed controversial at the moment. Nobody seems to be able to say anything. Mm. How do you cope with that? Do you just let it wash over you, or?
Yeah. Like at this stage, it's like I've dealt with it. As we were talking about doing reps in the gym, right? The more you do something, the more you kind of build resilience and get used to it. So I've kind of just reached a stage where like I've had the online mobs come after me multiple times in different flavors and varieties. And so I'm used to dealing with a degree of backlash. Mm. And also, you know, I've been dealing with criticism, public criticism, since I released my first album, right? I've had people who are like, man, this guy sucks. Zuby should stop rapping. Zuby shouldn't. You know, I've dealt with all of that, and I still do. And ultimately, it's also, there are some people's opinions I care about, and there are a lot of people's opinions I don't care about. Mm. So if someone, you know, if someone with 17 followers on Twitter and a username that looks like a bot and a fake display profile, like why would I care about that person's opinion? Like it doesn't, you see what I mean? It's like, it just doesn't matter, right? Just, you know, anonymous accounts on YouTube or whatever. It doesn't matter. I care about the opinions of my friends, my family, my actual fans and supporters, people who actually like my work. I care about that. But if it's just, you know, random, you know, we live in this weird time, right? Where I'm sure you dealt with this. Any kind of content creator, anyone who puts themselves out publicly deals with this, which is that, you know, there are people who just go around, especially the internet now, and they just spout negativity, and that's their
thing. Isn't it? We're talking about being positive and pushing yourself. These people, they do push themselves to be assholes. They do. That's where they're putting all their energies in, and you're like, why?
But it's strange.
It doesn't
make me feel bad about myself. It makes me feel bad for them. I'm just like, okay, sorry, dude. Like, you know, God bless you. I hope you. You're not, because they're not angry at me. They're mad at themselves. No. They're mad at their life. They're not happy in life. And so, I mean, when was the last time you went on YouTube and just watched random videos and downvoted them and wrote mean comments? When did you last do that?
Nobody
who is doing things and who is being productive and getting on with life does that. So if that's your thing, then I'm like, okay, like I kind of just feel bad for you. Like you're not going to make, there's nothing you can say about me that's going to make me sort of doubt myself or lose my confidence. So I just kind of hope that you know, this person can deal with whatever mental hangups that they have. And you know what? Occasionally it happens, right? Occasionally it happens. And sometimes I'm aware of it because I have actually had people, this is very rare, but I have actually had people who have sent me messages sort of saying like, you know what? Like I was like, I was an a-hole to you, and I just want to say, like, I'm sorry. Like, I didn't,
wow.
You know, like,
yeah.
You know, it doesn't happen often, but I have had that. They're like, yeah, you know, I was in a bad place, and you were the first person that popped up, so I just thought I'd lash out at you, but actually, I kind of think you're pretty cool now, and actually like your music or whatever, you know. So I'm like,
yeah, man.
So I'm like, yeah, it happens. So I'm like, cool.
Jay, my missus gets it all the time because she's got a bit of a profile, and so now she's getting into that area where people do seek her out and they do want to say things to her. But like you just said, instead of fighting fire with fire, she'll actually get into conversations with them and go, well, why are you saying that? Why do you think that then? She goes, you don't know me. Why is this happening? Mm. And 9 times out of 10, the conversation turns around. They go, actually, you're right. I'm really sorry. I was just lashing out. And she does that all the time. And it's brilliant to see.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to do. You know, it's hard to do.
Yeah.
But it does. It is important. You know, you do have to. You know, sometimes you can just not respond, or you know, block or mute or whatever. But sometimes, I've had people who just say something like totally like random and mean and uncalled for, and I'm just like, you know, sometimes just like, oh, why did you say that? That wasn't very nice.
If you say
that to someone, like they do quickly realize, oh. Like, oops, like,
yeah.
I was being a bit of a, you know.
Yeah. But it can be just like a throwaway comment. You'll just go, yeah, all right. Like, you like, okay, yeah. Dude.
Okay, dude.
And then you're like, what the fuck? And literally all you said, okay, dude.
And then
that escalates. And you're like, that was just a fucking throwaway comment. That wasn't...
Yeah.
This goes back to what I was saying at the beginning. Nobody really wants to sit down and have a conversation. We're all too busy shouting and wanting to be right and better. And we've got cancel culture now. This is, you know, it's not enough that someone needs to be spoken to about something or have a conversation with them. It's like, no, they have to be completely ruined.
That's not cool.
Nah, man, I don't know. You know, I get it. I get where it comes from, but that's not going to solve anything, is it? There seems to be a mob walking around on the internet going, right, who's next? You know, that's not going to solve anything.
No.
It saddens me, man. I just want everyone to get along. Why can't we all just get along?
The reality is, you know, most of us do.
Like, yeah.
If we're being honest, most of us do. Like if you go outside and you just, I don't know, go to the park, go to the town center, go, you see actually, you know, people get on surprisingly well, at least, people can be polite and civil for the most part. And it's, you know, it's in pockets. The internet amplifies everything, of course, because people behave worse on social media than they do in real life. Cause you can't be punched, but, in real life though, you know, it's the same when people start talking about like, oh my gosh, like everything is racist, everything is sexist, everything. And then, you know, I go outside and I'm like, I don't think so. Like everyone seems to be pretty harmonious here, right? Like,
that's true. Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's these two worlds that are going on where in one world everything is sort of terrible and the system is awful and you know everything is on the rise and there's you know hate crimes are rising and poverty is right and then you go outside and you're a bit like
Yeah, so
you know, like even with the coronavirus stuff, right? Like we know this is a real, like it's affected people or whatever. But you know, you can get in this little bubble where it's like, oh my gosh, we're living through the Black Death, and this thing is just wiping people out and destroying jobs and the economy and killing people, and we must do this and we must do that and whatever. And then you know, you kind of step out and you're a bit like, okay, like it's not, right?
Yeah.
I'm not, you know, this is not saying this thing doesn't exist, but the level of fear mongering and hype and all of that versus the sort of observable reality seems to me like there's a big discrepancy there.
Yeah, you're right. It felt like people, in my life, people came together. I had people ringing me that I haven't spoken to in 10 years, just ringing me up and go, dude, are you all right? Like, this is all fucked. I go, yeah, how are you? And it did genuinely bring everyone together. And then it's the internet. The internet comes up all the time.
The internet's terrible.
Yeah.
We've been running this, smartphones plus social media. You know, I think people forget that we're living through the biggest human sort of social experiment ever.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that, You know, the fact that, you know, I can pick up my phone right now and send a tweet out, which will potentially reach hundreds of thousands or even millions of people. Like, that's not supposed to be possible.
No,
it's like that's really new. That's really new. That's really, really new. Like, you know,
and it's possible for everybody. Whereas when I was a kid, like, people like David Bowie and people like that they lived on another planet. They weren't from here.
Yeah.
And now anyone could just tweet something to millions.
You couldn't send a message to David Bowie telling him what you think about him, you know?
Nah. Exactly. It shouldn't still be possible. You shouldn't be able to. We aspire to be these people, and yet, you know, you can, oh man, you can tell Stevie Wonder that his albums are shit now. You're like, come on, man. Stevie Wonder, what are you doing?
Yeah, it's amazing. You can just tell the president, tell the prime minister, like, this is what I think of you. You know what I mean? And it's just like, and you don't even need to use your real name. You can like, just hide behind. So
go on.
Yeah, I was just saying people forget how new it all is, and we're certainly not we're not evolved for this. Like, we're supposed to still be only know a couple hundred people at the most, not be connected to so many. So.
We're like children with a hammer. Like, you shouldn't give children a hammer because they're not going to know what to do with it. They're just going to smash things. I mean, I shouldn't be able to tell Boris Johnson that I think his policies are bollocks.
I shouldn't
be in that position.
you really should, and we all are. That's the thing. It's like, this is like a nuclear weapon. Like, we don't even.
Yeah. We've all got the button. We've all got the button, and we're gonna fuck shit up. This is why you were talking
about cancel culture, right? Because that's what it is. Like, people whip up the mob online. Like, people are angry about stuff that they shouldn't even know exists.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you shouldn't even be aware. Like, I don't know, something can happen tomorrow. Something happens tomorrow in some random town in Wisconsin in America, and the next thing you know, you've got people in the UK, in Spain, in Brazil are tweeting about it and sharing it, and everyone's getting all amped up over this thing that happened in Wisconsin. And it's like, we shouldn't even know that this happened, right? We shouldn't even know that this happened. And now the next thing, that person who did it is losing their job. And like, And it's just like, wait, this is,
someone in Southampton was not pleased about something that happened in Wisconsin.
It's just, it's strange. And, I don't think people have really taken the time to step back and just be like, wait, hang on, what are we doing?
And
it's cool. You know, there's so many positives to it, of course, right? We know we both do podcasts and put out content. There's so many positives with social media and everything. But you've got to make sure you use the tool rather than let it use you.
Absolutely. What a beautiful way to finish. That was perfect. Thank you so much for coming on, man. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you. And where can we find you on all the social medias, funnily enough?
Yeah, sure. I'm on everything at Zuby Music. That is Zuby Music. You can find me on there. My podcast, Real Talk with Zuby, and my music are also available on iTunes, Spotify, and other platforms.
Excellent. Thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
You're very welcome.
Produced by Paul Daniels at pauldaniels.tv.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.